Well, good morning. It is the word on the wire is that Diana Duran has resigned at 1. I think it was 1 a.m. in the morning. So she is out of the government. And so anyway, that's one less drama out there. If I can find anything in the news here. But kind of an exciting, All right. So I don't see anything. Oh, here we go. 29 minutes ago, Albuquerque Journal, Diana Duran resigns. So I'm not going to say she's guilty. Seemed to be a lot of evidence, you know, but she's out. Post on the Facebook page of the Democratic Party of New Mexico says Secretary Diana Duran has resigned. Posted at 1 a.m. includes an email from Carrie Fresquez, Interim Elections Director and Chief Information Officer, which says in part, quote, "In light of Secretary Duran's apparent resignation, I'm hopeful that we can move forward with a fair election in 2016 and that trust can be restored in the Secretary of State's office," said the Democratic Party of New Mexico Chairwoman Deborah Haaland. "We will have a strong Democratic candidate that will take a hard look at the drop in voter participation in New Mexico, as well as other various issues facing the Secretary of State's office." And she's going to be in Santa Fe District Court on Friday in connection with fraud and other charges. Anyway, one less scandal to attend to. All right, so Hillary is gone through Benghazi. Is she doing it 2 days? I mean, I was kind of a little bit bored by the whole thing because, I don't know, I didn't expect anything to come out. So there was, I'll have some clips here for you, but she obviously and we've got a Category 5 Hurricane Patricia. Isn't that amazing? Patricia, you know, it's not the height of the summer any stretch of the imagination. Patricia, the hurricane, is the strongest recorded hurricane in the Western Hemisphere. Wow. So I've got to get a little information on this. But do you think that has Hillary passed through the dark night of the soul, and is she up to other things, you know? Is she been, I guess in, during the debates, they're not going to challenge her. Senator Webb, who really was probably the best suited person to challenge her because he was least establishment candidate, he didn't really get a good crack at her. As a matter of fact, he said it was the fix was in, the debate was fixed. So Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, would they make an unbeatable pair in terms of the primary? The most portion of her she got doing the Benghazi testimony. She had the rest of the Democratic candidates, although Webb's out, so. And who's the guy, Lincoln Chafee? He is also appear to be running too strongly. So, you know, this is an amazing story, by the way. Hurricane Patricia becomes strongest hurricane in history as winds reach 200 miles an hour. Isn't that amazing? And it's off the West Coast. Catastrophic landfall expected in Mexico Friday. That's amazing. My machine is very slow this morning, which is why I'm doing a little shucking and jiving right here, getting ready for the clips to come up. But this is amazing. Jeez, 200-mile-an-hour hurricane, and it's just a few miles. Nothing to worry about, of course, though. Take no evasive action. Here's a little clip on Patricia.
200-plus mile-per-hour wind. That's what we're looking at in Hurricane Patricia off the coast of Mexico. That makes it the strongest tropical cyclone that has ever existed in the Western Hemisphere. And they dropped, you know, instruments down into this thing, the Hurricane Hunters. So this is legit stuff. Western Hemisphere, we're including the Atlantic, the Eastern Pacific, the Central Pacific. So, you know, apart from the Western Pacific, this is the strongest storm on Earth. Now, I want to show you a little bit of video from last year, Hurricane, you know, deal, Cabo San Lucas. Whenever you see a storm like this in the Eastern Pacific, it conjures up memories of this. Crazy thing is that was only a Category 3. This one is a Category 3 to be that at landfall.
Yeah, so this is the real deal. And Hurricane Patricia right now is eyeing the southwest coast of Mexico. And here's where it is expected to be the worst. So basically where you see the purple, Puerto Vallarta, all the way down to Manzanillo. Now look at this future radar showing you this. Want to show you the timing here. Notice 5:30 this evening. That's when the eye of the storm is expected to make landfall. Now, this is expected to strengthen once again. So by midday, look at those winds, 205 miles per hour. This is certainly going to be a catastrophic storm. The rainfall will just be part of the story, but look at that, up to 12 inches right along the coast.
All right. So my prediction on this, for my little bit of knowledge of atmospheric stuff, is that we're definitely going to get some remnants from this, and because it's really not that far away. I mean, it's a couple hundred miles away, whatever, 500 miles away, whatever it is. Now somebody will call me up and say it's actually 1,000 miles away. But I mean, this thing is big and it is super strong. It's going to hit as a Category 5. That is catastrophic is hopefully probably will be an understatement. And here is a little bit on your Patricia.
With a powerful Category 5 Hurricane Patricia looming off the coast of Mexico and expected to make landfall as a Category 5 later tonight, by the way, I'm sure you've seen a lot of images like this, really impressive looking graphics and maps. And yes, a storm like this will produce those. But I want to put you inside a major hurricane so you know what this is going to be like for these guys overnight. And if you live there, this is what you're going to be, you know, dealing with. It's probably going to be worse than this. This was Hurricane Odile 2014. So I'm taking you back to last year. This was Cabo San Lucas. And no, Cabo's not going to get hit by this storm. But look at the damage and some of the wind. When you listen to this, maybe turn up the speakers here. Put the phone up to your ear if you're watching on your mobile phone. Just listen to this. And here's the thing. This one, Patricia, is expected to be a Category 5. There were thousands of people after Odile that were trapped in their, you know, resort hotel rooms. And Patricia is headed towards some resort town. So please, if you live there, if you're going to be visiting there, if you know anybody there, make sure to take this seriously. This is the real deal.
All right. So as with all these storms, they have outlying bands of clouds that go out hundreds or thousands of miles. And so we can definitely expect to be hit by some of these bands, although it looks like it's headed in the direction of Texas, but, you know, being right next door to Texas, it'll be interesting to see what the impact of this thing will be, but pretty amazing, to be totally honest. And I'll get a little bit more news on that for you. I've got Miguel coming in. Gina, if you're listening, I meant to call you last night. You're welcome to come in too. Mayor Ken Miyagashima. You're also invited. I know you're listening. Put down your Egg McMuffin, Ken. Get over here. 101 Perkins. All right. So some of the headlines. Well, I'll come back and do some headlines, and we'll do a little bit more on this freaking storm. Kelly O'Connor Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. And it is 6:16. On the 23rd of October, and we've got the strongest hurricane in recorded history in the Western Hemisphere in terms of now I gotta go back and do a little more research on that. But what exactly is the claim? But over 200 miles an hour is nothing to sniff at. But we'll be back and talk about that just in a second. All right, here is a little bit more on Hurricane Patricia. It's going to definitely affect us. I mean, you know, weird weather this year, folks. Of course, it's all global warming. Don't worry, it's just global warming. Check this out.
Of course, the huge story on the planet right now is Hurricane Patricia. But here is the interesting thing. This storm is actually going to play into the United States weather a little bit over the weekend, and really not in a good way either. Of course, it's going to be catastrophic for Mexico. But the moisture associated with it is eventually going to start to ride up into the southern plains. So we're talking about eastern Texas specifically, where it's set to be a really, really wet weekend.
Now, they've already been dealing with a lot of rain in the forecast from a front that has been moving through. But this is the moisture that moves up this weekend. So we are talking a very saturated picture through the weekend, and we could have up to a foot where you see that orange and red. So we're talking Dallas, Houston, all the way down to Corpus Christi. That's where our flooding concerns are. Already a million people are under flash flood watches and warnings.
Look at this stuff out of Odessa. I mean, this is West Texas. This is what they've been dealing with over the past couple of days. And yeah, that's without the tropical moisture even added in. So once you add that into the picture, it's going to be a whole lot worse for East Texas.
And they're talking about, if you heard that, an inch of, a foot of rain coming down, and they've already got a bunch of rain over there. So here's another report on this massive hurricane, strongest in the eastern Pacific, western Pacific, whatever it is.
Earlier, this is a Category 5 Hurricane Patricia. There's the Baja, Mexico, of course, the west coast of Mexico, 160-mile-an-hour winds. Yeah, tropical storm force winds expected along the coastline tomorrow afternoon, and then eventually the core of this hurricane making landfall late Friday or early on the weekend. It's got a big punch to it and potentially catastrophic for the areas that it does make that landfall. Temperatures in the mid-80s.
All right, well, believe it or not, the speed of the hurricane had increased by 40 miles an hour by the time from one day to the next. Here's another clip from USA Today.
Hurricane Patricia is what we're talking about this morning. It's hitting land today and is already pounding Mexico.
Yeah, and as Mario has been telling us, it's going to be the strongest hurricane on record to ever hit Mexico. And some people reporting winds of up to like 200 miles an hour. Mario?
Yeah, and the storm surge is going to be really incredible. We're talking about catastrophic losses along the coastline of Mexico later today. Here is the storm right now. It has 200 mile per hour winds, a Category 5 hurricane. You can see the eye really well. Once they become Category 3, major storms are above. The eye is usually only about 10 to 15 miles in diameter, and it's now moving towards north-northwest. It'll eventually recurve and hit the Mexican coastline later on this afternoon. As we said, the pressures are way down there at 880 millibars, making it officially, according to the aircraft that was in there measuring, the strongest hurricane on record. Now, a lot of that moisture is going to work its way across Mexico and into Texas. And here's the rough projection of what we're forecasting through Tuesday, at least 9 inches of rainfall in some parts of central Texas.
All right, so and I'm looking at the track. It doesn't look like they've got it set up to actually come over here. But my experience with these storms is that they have these, you know, these storm bands that are just so big. And I mean, I guess having lived through a number of hurricanes in Florida, I do have a little bit on Hillary Clinton, disgusting human being that she is. Could be our next president, though. Who wins if Trump goes against Hillary? I think Trump does. All right, here's a little bit from this committee. This is Kurt Gowdy, Trey Gowdy, whatever his name is. I guess Kirk Gowdy's an NFL ex-player. Check this out.
Stevens, Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods served this country with courage and with honor. And they were killed under circumstances that most of us could never imagine. Terrorists pour through the front gate of an American facility, attacking people and property with machine guns, mortars, and fire. It is important that we remember how these four men died. It is equally important that we remember how these four men lived and why. They were more than four images on a television screen. They were husbands and fathers and sons and brothers and family and friends. They were Americans who believed in service and sacrifice. Many people speak wistfully of a better world, but do little about it. These four went out and actually tried to make it better, and it cost them their lives. So we know what they gave us. What do we owe them? Justice for those that killed them. We owe their families our everlasting gratitude, respect. We owe them and each other the truth. The truth about why we were in Libya. The truth about what we were doing in Libya. The truth about the escalating violence in Libya before we were attacked and these four men were killed. The truth about requests for additional security. The truth about requests for additional personnel. The truth about requests for additional equipment. The truth about where and why our military was positioned as it was on the anniversary of 9/11. The truth about what was happening and being discussed in Washington while our people were under attack. The truth about what led to the attacks and the truth about what our government told the American people after the attacks. Why were there so many requests for more security personnel and equipment, and why were those requests denied in Washington? Why did the State Department compound and facility not even come close to meeting proper security specifications? What policies were we pursuing in Libya that required a physical presence in spite of the escalating violence? Who in Washington was aware of the escalating violence? What precautions, if any, were taken on the anniversary of 9/11? What happened in Washington after the first attack, and what was our response to that attack? What did the military do or not do? What did our leaders in Washington do or not do, and when? Why was the American public given such divergent accounts of what caused these attacks? And why is it so hard to get information from the very government these four men represented, served, and sacrificed for? Even after an accountability review board and a half dozen congressional investigations, these and other questions still lingered. And
well, this is the opening statement by Trey Gowdy, and let me got a couple of clips here on from stuff that she said, and I've got a little bit of a montage here, I guess, of some of the stuff that she was saying, and then obviously can't play it all, folks, but I know you love you some Hillary. But so is she going to be the next president? Are the emails going to go away? Does Benghazi matter? Did she have an affair with her assistant? What's her name? Hummus Abedin? All right, so here is, well, let's take a little, I want to get to this for you, but let's take a little break here and come back and hear some of Hillary's testimony. Hillary, in my opinion, is a good, bordering on great speaker and debater. Not great, really, but she's pretty good anyway. 6:30, Kelly O'Connor showing on Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and we'll come back with some juicy tidbits from Hillary Clinton.
Caught me away, where the morning's bright,
All right, so I've got here, 523-1450, by the way, 523-1450, but I've got here the opening statement from Hillary on Benghazi.
Let's bring you long-form public affairs programming from the nation's capital and are a public service of your
television. Ew, CNN, C-SPAN advertising.
Madam Secretary, you are recognized for your opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Cummings, members of this committee. The terrorist attacks at our diplomatic compound and later at the CIA post in Benghazi, Libya on September 11th, 2012, took the lives of four brave Americans, Ambassador Chris Stevens, Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods. I'm here to honor the service of those four men. The courage of the Diplomatic Security Agency and the CIA officers who risked their lives that night, and the work their colleagues do every single day all over the world. I knew and admired Chris Stevens. He was one of our nation's most accomplished diplomats. Chris's mother like to say that he had sand in his shoes because he was always moving, always working, especially in the Middle East that he came to know so well. When the revolution broke out in Libya, we named Chris as our envoy to the opposition. There was no easy way to get him into Benghazi to begin gathering information and meeting those Libyans who were rising up against the murderous dictator Gaddafi.
All right, so 16 minutes of this, 17 minutes of this type of testimony. Let's cut to the chase here. The night of the Benghazi attack from Hillary's perspective.
Thing that is said to me or about me to take away from the heroic efforts that the diplomatic security officers exhibited. The five men who were with Chris and Sean Smith risked their lives repeatedly and were themselves under grave threat. I wanted to point out that even when we try to get it right, which we do try, sometimes there are unintended consequences, and there is an example out of this tragedy. Coming out of previous assessments of attacks on facilities, we now have safe havens, safe rooms in facilities, particularly residences. The diplomatic security officers were able to get both Chris and Sean into that safe room. Of course, the idea behind the safe room, why security experts advocated for them, was to protect our civilians, our diplomats, from attacks like the one that was occurring. The attackers used diesel fuel to set the compound on fire. And the safe room was anything but safe. I'm sure the committee members know that neither Chris Stevens nor Sean Smith died from injuries directly inflicted by the attackers. They both died of smoke inhalation. And one of the recommendations in this ARB report is that when we have safe havens, we need to have equipment that will enable people that are safe within them to withstand what happened in Benghazi. The lead diplomatic security officer who was with both the ambassador and Sean Smith endeavored to lead them to safety through a wall of black smoke. He wanted to get them out of the compound interior up to the roof where they could be out of the fire and also out of the attacker's assault. He himself nearly died of smoke inhalation. When he looked around to make sure that both Sean and Chris were with him, he couldn't find them. Rather than proceeding and saving himself, which would be a natural human instinct, he turned back into that black diesel smoke, desperately trying to find Chris and Sean. He did find Sean, and Sean had succumbed to smoke inhalation. And the diplomatic security officer managed to take Sean out of the building. He could not find Chris Stevens. One of the horrors of the hours after the attack was our failure to be able to find where the ambassador was. We hoped against hope that he had somehow gotten himself out of the compound and that he was alive somewhere, maybe in the back. And additional efforts by the diplomatic security officers and then eventually by the CIA reinforcements that arrived to find his body or to find him, hopefully, were unsuccessful. And they had to withdraw because of the continuing attack back to the CIA annex before we knew what had happened to the ambassador. We were desperate, and we were trying to call everybody we knew in Benghazi, in Libya, get additional help. What appears to have happened at some point later is that Libyans found Ambassador Stevens, and they carried him to the hospital in Benghazi. And Libyan doctors labored nearly 2 hours to try to resuscitate him. And I mention all of this because I want not just the committee members, but any viewers in the public to understand that this was the fog of war, that the diplomatic security officers and then later the CIA officers responded with heroism, professionalism, as they had been trained to do. We thought things would be safe once they took refuge in the CIA annex. And as we know, even though that was a highly fortified, much more secure facility than our diplomatic compound, and one that we had nothing to do with in the State Department, it turned out also to be a target for the militants, which is where the two CIA contractors, Mr. Woods and Mr. Doherty, died. But in looking at all of the information, the Accountability Review Board, and particularly Admiral Mullen, who was security personnel, did that night, came out agreeing that they were heroic and they did all they could do to try to save their colleagues' lives. I don't want anything that...
Well, it's remarkable. She never mentions for a moment what she did, although I haven't listened to all the testimony. I just find it somewhat strange that it's just kind of a recounting of that night that anybody would know at this point. 6:43 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. 523-1450. I'll come back with a few questions that were posed to her during her testimony, the Hillary Clinton testimony on Benghazi. And here's a little weather for you coming up. All right, so here's a little bit of testimony, a little bit of back and forth from her and a member of Congress.
Could I get the first chart, please? Do you know how many security requests there were in the first quarter of 2012?
For everyone or for Benghazi?
Yes, ma'am. Related to Benghazi and Libya. Do you know how many there were?
No, I do not know.
Ma'am, there were just over 100 plus. Second quarter, do you know how many there were?
No, I do not.
Ma'am, there were 172-ish. Might have been 171 or 173. That's how many were there in July and August, and then in that week and a few days before the attacks, you know?
There were a number of them. I know
that. Yes, ma'am. 83 mm-hmm. by our count. That's over 600 requests. You've testified here this morning that you had none of those reach your desk. Is that correct also?
That's correct.
Madam Secretary, Mr. Blumenthal wrote you 150 emails. Mm-hmm. It appears from the testimony or the materials that we've read that all of those reached your desk. Can you tell us why security requests from your professionals, the men that you just testified, and with which I agree are incredibly professional, incredibly capable people, trained in the art of keeping us all safe, none of those made it to you? But a man who was a friend of yours, who'd never been to Libya, didn't know much about it, at least that's his testimony, didn't know much about it. Every one of those reports that he sent on to you that had to do with situations on the ground in Libya, those made it to your desk. You asked for more of them, you read them, you corresponded with him, and yet the folks that worked for you didn't have the same courtesy.
Well, Congressman, as you're aware, he's a friend of mine. He sent me information he thought might be of interest.
All right, so comes across as a little bit shaky, I guess. 600 security requests, not one of them got to her. It just doesn't really make sense to me, but I don't know how these things work, of course. But here's a little bit more. Hillary Clinton, I was not responsible for the security services.
This is the group of people that would go into a situation, as you described, when an embassy had been overrun, attacked, kidnapping, or whatever, to basically give guidance to any of the other forces or help that was coming in, correct? And I know that your staff, and we've got a number of emails from your staff, that originally recommended that that you send the FEST team. And I think they may have talked to Mr. Sullivan or it was somebody that got an email, and they said they would pass it up the chain. And somebody made the decision not to send the FEST team, which would have been, as Secretary of State, I would think, since it was a State Department-led mission, that would have been the first thing that you would have wanted to get out. But instead, if I understand correctly from the email chain, your first request was to see how soon the FBI could get over there. Is that a true statement?
Well, Congressman, the FEST went to East Africa to help rebuild our embassy capacity. They have expertise in you know, once our two embassies were bombed, how do we regain communications, for example? We were not going to rebuild in Benghazi, so there was no reason to send a FEST team. There was a reason to try to get the FBI investigators into Benghazi mm-hmm. as soon as it was safe for them to go, so they could start to try to build a case so we could bring the perpetrators of the attack to justice. That was absolutely the primary goal that we had in working with the FBI. And I think it's, you know, when we make a decision on a deployment of the FEST, it is not just the Secretary of State. In this case,
well, anyway, that's getting into the aftermath. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, Sergio. Good morning, Kelly. How you doing?
Morning, Sergio. What's up?
You know, I just wanted to comment on what you said about her comments are shaky at best. I agree with you. I rarely disagree with you, so I'm calling up agreeing with you most of the time. But you know, this woman here, and I know some very, far left Democrats are listening, but I don't care. This woman is going to make Richard Nixon look like an amateur. You know, she is an expert fibber, just you know, for lack of a better word.
Well, I mean, I just think that she's. The way she's talking about the heroism of the people involved, and she's kind of emotional. She's talking about people dying and stuff. She doesn't, I mean, what people want to know is where were you that night? When did you find out about the information? What was your response? What were you in charge of? What was your decision? Who, if anybody, ordered to the security forces reacting to this to stand down? Why wasn't Signorella Air Force Base contacted? And why weren't jets sent over there to protect the embassy? Why was the gunship, which was circling the compound, pulled off and not allowed to fire? I mean, there's just all these questions, and I don't hear any of them being addressed.
Well, I mean, there is a complete lack of accountability there, you know, and this to me is none but a farce for the entertainment and the consumption of the public. There's something that is hidden, and it's insidious, and, you know, an embassy is supposed to be protected at all costs. Now, 600 requests, even two, should have raised her suspicion and her interest in the matter. So even two out of, and even 598 out of the way, two should have gone ahead and made her act upon it accordingly.
Does it make any sense what she's saying? I just from just kind of a, if you're kind of interested in news or history or whatever, the way mm-hmm. she's talking about this doesn't make any sense, because people don't really care about her narrative of what happened. What they want to know is what her experience was that night and what decisions she made or what other people made and why those decisions were made or weren't. I mean, you know, weren't made. That's why this whole thing's going on. Thanks for the call. We got another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Sharon. How are you?
Good, Sharon. I'm up against some ads. I got a beautiful ads to play, so we just got a little bit of time, but give it your best shot.
You bet. It was 3 a.m. Who answered the phone? The answer, not a Democrat.
It's too bad.
You remember the promises they made?
Yes,
of the course. Campaign promises. Uh-huh. Who's going to answer the phone at 3 a.m?
Well,
not a Democrat.
You know, Obama was at the White House the entire time. He had to know. He either, like, maybe just put his hands over his ears. Thanks for the call, Sharon. I got to go. He put his hands over his ears, or I don't know. I mean, I can't figure it out. He was there. He's the one who should be answering questions, but kind of hard to put the president on the spot like that. We'll take a break and come back. And I've got a little time to play one more clip, I think.
There will be peace.
Here's just a little clip from Judge Napolitano on Hillary's testimony.
I look at this from the point of view of three audiences. She should be taken back there in the room. The second is the American public, which she wants to have elect her president. And the third, I think she's forgotten about. That's about 25 FBI agents and investigators in the Justice Department, not far from where she testified today, who are looking at the following things she said. They're looking for material misrepresentations. They're looking for the willingness to deceive. They're looking for actual material lies. Remember, she's under oath. And they're looking for how many different versions she can possibly give of the various events. And I suggest to you that they found a field day today. My colleague Steve Hayes has just outlined a couple of her deceptions and different versions. Remember, she can be prosecuted for misleading Congress as well as for lying to Congress. She is under oath. This is not a political rally. She's also being investigated by the FBI for at least four crimes: espionage, the failure to secure national security secrets, destruction of government property, wiping the server clean, lying under oath to a federal judge when she said she gave the government everything. And I think the FBI has a lot more to go on today as a result of this testimony, because she forgot about that third and hidden audience.
All right. Kind of an interesting take on that. We'll take a break here. We're supposed to have Miguel Silva here in the morning, and Gina is invited. I got a quick call. Real quick call here. You got 10 seconds.
Piece of cake. I could do that in less than that time. The Get Hillary Committee did not get her. All she made is you people look so petulant and puny and pathetic. She knocked your socks off 14 different ways. She was brilliant. Brilliant, I tell you.
Thank you. Take care. All right, folks. Well, we used up all the music time, but so we'll be right back.
Damn, Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell. He has to drive down.
All right, so you heard Hillary. I'm looking for any clip that would really seem to damn her, not just where she made a mistake, but I'm looking for a clip that would say what I wanted to know from this whole thing. This is a 7-hour attack, and what I wanted to hear was the storyline that first kind of caught my ear, that the U.S. government knew about the attack and they called out for an SOS, and there was a response at some point to stand down, and that at that point the CIA annex, which was a mile away, these kind of heroic guys came over on their own and fought, and they called for the government somewhere, somehow, to come in and save them during a 7-hour assault, and that never happened, and they were told to stand down. That's what I want to know. And if Hillary Clinton was not involved in that decision, God bless her, but who was? And so she was in charge of the U.S. government in terms of Secretary of State. You know, she is supposedly in charge of all this stuff. The only person who would outrank her was Obama. He was at the White House. There's never been any kind of description, as far as I know, as to what Obama was up to, other than we see that from his schedule that he was in the White House the whole time. So anyway, I don't even claim to know what happened, but I think that the Republicans, if they were hoping to trap her, failed miserably, and now she looks more presidential in the midst of a giant scandal with emails and everything. Anyway, having said that, 7:08, Kelly O'Connell, we have 2 out of 3 candidates here. I wonder if Ken might have lost his way. Maybe his car didn't work in the morning and he had to hitchhike. But we're just delighted to have Miguel here and Gina. And thanks for coming in, guys. I know it's super early.
Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly.
Guys and gals. And all right, so it's coming up days within the election. Is having never run for office, it's got to be just so exciting and so nerve-wracking, and you're wondering if you're taking the right steps, and you're kind of managing whatever funds you have for advertising and a last-minute blitz and all this stuff. But it's got to be one of the great experiences of the human in human history to run for office.
Oh, so, definitely. It has been exciting and fun for me on many levels, many that you just described. I have run for office before, but yes, I am enjoying the. This has been a lot of fun.
The cut and thrust, Gina. How about you? You're a first timer.
No, I would do this again.
All right, just briefly, I want to bring a human element into this. Tell me if just a little bit of some of the experiences you've had talking to people that have, maybe you've said, I'm Gina and I'm running for office, and they said, wow, it's great, you know, great to meet you, and this is what we need to work on, or I hate politicians, or finally a woman of the people, or what are some of the kind of interactions that we had?
Pretty much everything what you've said. What's been very interesting is how people have actually come to surface with, you know, like I said, a lot of people, I've told them it's either step up or step out. People have been complaining and griping, and nobody ever had the courage to get up and do this. So for all those people that at one time or another complained or griped about something but didn't have the courage to step up but shared their story with me, that's what inspired me that I needed to do this.
And what are some of the main complaints that you've heard from the people since you started the campaign? What are some of the main complaints that you've heard?
Once again, that the current city government and our management has not been listening to the people. We're not a family-friendly city. We're not a business-friendly city.
Do you have a lot of people that argue with you? This is a wonderful place to live? Because I had said, I think it was during the days when I thought I was a comedian and I was making jokes about the mayor being going back to sumo wrestling, and somebody called up, I think it was David, who said, we've got running water, we've got food, we've got shelter. What in God's name are you criticizing Ken Miyagashima for?
You know, it's been very interesting to see, I mean, how simple the people of Las Cruces are. We don't have a lot of high demands, or we're pretty simple people. We don't require, you know, the best of everything. And it's made me really sad to actually drive around areas and see Ken Miyagashima signs. And you look at the roads that these people live on. Mm-hmm. And right there, that in itself tells you that, you know what, these are very simple, humble people. But, you know, for the most part, you know, we do have running water and we do have mm-hmm. everything, and stuff like that makes us happy. But when I see those signs, that just makes me really sad. I feel like going and knocking on those doors and saying, really?
You should do that. You know, and it made me wonder if maybe David was raised in an internment camp where they didn't have these things. All right, Mikhail, let me ask you, what are some of the things you've been in city council? You're running for mayor. You're trying to upset the apple cart here. What are some of the things that you've heard from people that you said, I'm Miguel, I'm running for mayor? What feedback?
Well, I think very similar. We may be simple people, but we definitely have high standards, you know, and we're not a podunk town. We are the second largest city in the state, and we do have high standards in this area, and we have high expectations, which I really appreciate about a lot of my fellow residents and neighbors. What I hear a lot is that Ken's been in office long enough. It's time for him to move on. That a lot of these items haven't been addressed.
Mm-hmm.
As a city councilor, you can take certain projects, you can take certain ideas so far.
Yeah.
But if you're not being supported at the top by the mayor, or then it dies. And there's been a lot of projects that have had that has occurred.
And you voted against, for example, the tax.
Yeah, I did vote against
the
grocery receipt tax. Yes, I was the only one that voted against the gross receipt tax, only because, as mentioned, there are certain issues that do need to go out in front of the public. Raising taxes is one of them. And that is one of the reasons why I voted no against it. It should have gone in front of the residents for a vote.
And so I saw I've heard your ads on the radio. And Gina, I have not heard, I'm trying to remember if I've heard anything, but I saw, are you running ads right now, radio ads? Or
no.
Okay. And I know that stuff is expensive, but I heard some radio ads that I thought were hard hitting. I was impressed by those. I was on Drudge last night, and two ads for your campaign popped up. A young Ken Miyagashima in one of the ads, and then an older, you know, and so, but I was impressed. How do you get it on Drudge?
I have no idea how it got on Drudge. I know that there are persons out there that have been active and have been active in this campaign, but I can't answer that one there, Kelly, other than I know that the New Mexico Realtors Association the local Realtors Association has endorsed me. And so where those ads are coming from, I mean, I'm thankful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was interesting. I had to rub my eyes a little bit. I spent a lot of time in the Drudge. So
monitoring
Drudge Report, which is probably the best aggregator of news to see a local race. And you know what? You know, they've got this tracking software and all this stuff
sure.
on what you're into. And, you know, if I look up a book, for example, on Amazon, the next time I open up Amazon, it's right there. If you look up something on YouTube, an artist, the next time you open up YouTube, that artist is in the right. So this is very sophisticated. So, all right, we're going to come back. And guys, what do you want to get into this morning? How much time do we have left till the race is what day is that?
Oh, God.
Gina.
We're less than 2 weeks out.
Two weeks
this past Tuesday.
Holy. Are you able to sleep at night?
Oh, like a baby.
Yeah. Miguel, are you sleeping?
Oh, yeah, I'm sleeping.
All right. So anyway, we are going to come back and get into. So we're going to play a little Elvis gospel today. I hope you don't mind, Frankie and Kathy, since you hate Christianity. But I was playing some Elvis this week, and I thought maybe a little Elvis gospel. My mom had bought one time some Elvis gospel CDs, and I thought it was pretty impressive stuff. But great voice. Anyway, we're going to come back and talk to Gina and Miguel about, whatever comes up. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. Do me a favor. If you've got a good question, not an insult, but a good question for these candidates, call it in. Let's stir the pot a little bit. 716, we'll be right back. And Mayor Ken, I know you're out there chewing on a donut listening. Get in here. We have two out of the three candidates for mayor. Miguel Silva, Gina Montoya Ortega, and we have an empty chair. How sad. How sad. Well, the mayor was going to come on this morning, but he asked if there was any cameras, if he's going to be filmed, or any security cameras. And I said, yes, Miguel, of course. We're a modern facility.
Miguel or Ken? I mean,
Ken.
Okay, that's correct. The record.
He turned white as a sheet, turned around, and staggered off. No, but I actually heard the mayor will not allow anyone to film him. What is going on? Does he have a belief system that says if I'm filmed or photographed, it will capture my soul?
I don't know, Miguel. I can't answer that.
Gina, I mean, what's going on here?
I have no idea.
I don't know. You know, we've had a couple of incidents where he has turned it down because he was being taped. One happened to be at a neighborhood meeting. It was very unfortunate where Gina's daughter, in fact, I thought Gina's daughter was going to be here this morning. I was hoping and saying, Gina.
Jesse.
Maybe Jesse could play the role of the mayor or something this morning. But Jesse was taping the mayor and Ken actually asked her to turn it off.
Why?
I don't know, Gina, would you, it was
weird. We had made it as far as we were doing the introductions of ourselves. I introduced myself, Miguel went, and then when it was Ken's turn, we were in the group of people and he just said, there's somebody recording and I don't think we agreed to this and I don't think it should be done. And
right.
I stood up at that time because it was my daughter in the back, my 19-year-old daughter that was not doing it to be malicious or, you know, whatever. She was doing it for educational purposes. And because my husband has not been able to attend because of the hours that he works and we work for ourselves, we can't just close the doors. And that Saturday, actually, my middle daughter was working as well, helping at the bakery. So my daughter thought that would be really interesting to record this and show them what mom's doing. And so I stepped up and I said, you know, that's my daughter. She's not doing anything wrong. She just, you know, and it was really sad because my kids are good. And at the end, there was supposed to be a code officer, a police officer. Actually, the chief of police was supposed to be there, but he didn't show up. So a code officer, an animal control officer, and a regular police officer showed up at the end of the what we were doing to kind of talk to see where these people were coming from. And when my 19-year-old daughter saw the police officers there, and we were up front, it made me feel so bad. She's like, Mom, I thought I had done something really bad. I thought they were coming to arrest me.
Wow.
I was like, wow, Jesse. And then she said, but I don't understand. She said, you know, it's a free country and, you know, people are recording people all the time. And what was the big deal? And I said, I have no idea.
That is bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, I came up to Jesse afterward and I talked to her and you could tell that she had been shaken by the incident. And then I said, you know, Jesse, as a public official, it comes with the territory, you know, to be in a public place, talking to a group like that. People tape all the time. And I think from a young person's point of view, they're used to taping just a tape. I mean, they have all their cell phones and everything. And so it was a very interesting incident. And then there was another that incident, which was really it was. And you can tell she was shaken. And so I said, yeah, you know, we're public officials. You can tape us.
Well, I mean, this is strange. I mean, why do you get into public life other than to, you know, I mean, by definition, you get into public life and you give up some of your anonymity and
well, it comes with the territory of being in public office and even running for public office. I think Gina probably has experienced that now, is that, you know, you're in public office and so there's a certain level, there's a certain standard and a certain level that you're held to. So, and then there was also the Greater Chamber of Commerce. They taped us as well. And as I understand it, she declined to speak to them as well because it was going to be taped. At least that's what we were informed.
What I don't understand, I mean, is the mayor cracking up? I'm seriously, what is going on where he cannot be taped? I mean, he's the mayor of a prominent city and one of, you know.
Right. And we're taped every Monday as well. So I have no idea, you know.
I mean, what is he? I don't get it. I mean, so seriously, all joking aside, I do not get what's going on. That, I mean, I understand he doesn't want to come here. I've heard it from a couple of different people. He just declines to talk to people that he doesn't think are in his corner. He's not going to try to persuade anybody. He's not going to come here and talk to a group of people that he thinks are, I guess, anyway.
And that's one of the things that motivated me to run for office, Kelly, was because you can't be selective in terms of the people you listen to or talk to.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have to listen to the entire community. So
we do have a phone call. Thanks for the phone call. Call the Kelly Connell Show, and who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is your friend Bob.
Hey, Bob, what's up?
I miss you all very, very much. It's so nice to say hello.
Yeah, it's great. We've missed hearing from you. Hope the job's going well, and what's on your mind?
Yeah, to get to the point, I've had some really good experience. I mean, I'm a Republican, and I think McGill's a Democrat. I don't know about Gina. I know, but my experience with Ken has been that the guy is an extremely good diplomat.
Uh-huh.
And what I'd like to know is what does Miguel and Gina consider themselves? What type of diplomat are they? You know, and that kind of stuff.
Could you define Bob, please put on your mouse ears here. Could you define what being a good diplomat is, or what a diplomat and stop breathing into the phone for a second, by the way.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
The guy is extremely equitable, and he's very generous.
Give me an example of his generosity, and stop breathing into the phone, please.
So I'm breathing into the phone?
Yeah, you're kind of snorting into it. Give me an example of his generosity. I just want something for the listeners to hold on to for a definition here.
Okay. To give you an example, former Mayor Reuben Smith gave me a key to the city. And it really meant a lot to me. And then about a year or 2 years ago, I let a man from my church hold on to my key to the city, you know, because he's with foster care, and I thought it'd be nice for them to be able to see it and things like that. Well, as it turned out, when I asked him for my key in a plaque, if I could have it back to me, and he told me he didn't know what happened to it. And I was very stressed out by that. And so I went to Ken in a meeting, and I told him, I said, Ken, this is what happened. Ken had no hesitation in saying, Bob, don't worry about it. I'll get you another key.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's a minor example. But, you know, I mean, I just think that, you know, I've seen Miguel give awards at City Hall. And as much as I like Miguel, he doesn't look diplomatic to me. I don't know anything about Gina. I don't think Gina's had enough experience.
Well, Bob, if Ken's a great diplomat, can we send him to, Siberia or maybe over to Iran or something?
Kind of
help tamp down pressures?
Well,
I'll chip in on that trip.
Okay. Anyway, I was trying to avoid from calling, but I couldn't help it.
Oh, Bob, it's great to hear from you, man.
I want you to know that I love you all very much. I really thank you.
Bob, we love everything but the snorting, which you're going to have to work on.
I'm sorry. I got to get another phone, I guess.
That's all right. Thanks for the call. All right. Ken is a great diplomat. I still don't know what that means. Maybe he's tactful. I don't know. I mean, he's insulted me publicly, but I mean, to be quite frank, I went after him on the Oregon Mountains, and he punched back. I don't blame him. But I don't even know what that anyway, I don't even know what that means.
Diplomacy is one thing in regards to being a public servant, whether you're a city councilor or the mayor. But, I've always considered myself a public servant and have been. And that's how I look at myself, being an elected official. But this election is more than just being a diplomacy. It's addressing a lot of the community issues
and
so forth.
Let's switch gears here. Let's take a break and come back. What I want to talk to these candidates, so we got this know, we've got a race coming up here, an election, we're in the middle of a race. Got an election in which a lot is at stake because the city is simply not grown for a long time. We had a bigger economy in 2007. I don't hear the mayor addressing that. If he was here, and Ken, if you have to come on alone, if we have to sign a release form that we will not tape you in any way, shape, or form, I understand. But get on the show. But I mean, if he was here, I'd ask him, what are your plans to grow the economy? But in any event, we got big issues to talk about. We've got Miguel Silva, and we have Miss Gina here as well, and we'll be right back to talk to them about their campaigns and how they're going to change the city. Kelly O'Connell, AM Lush Music, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. That's 523-1450. So we're here with Miguel Silva and Gina Montoya Ortega, and Mayor Ken is sadly not here. I'm looking over his statement, a steady record of achievement. My mind is boggling, especially when I look and I see such elements in it as, let's see, the most impressive one, highest level of fire safety. You know?
Well, I'm not laughing at that. You know, we have a high level of fire safety, and it has reduced our insurance rating, but that's because the council has made that a priority. And we have built a fire safety unit up near the airport, and then also we are building the fire safety complex out on Sonoma Ranch.
Establishment of Oregon Mountain Desert Peaks National Monument, which is not only outside of the city, but a lot of people are pissed off at, but I guess that's an achievement. Thank you, Ken. Thanks for going to Washington while you're supposed to be hanging around here. Anyway, we have a Ken. Get on this show. Here we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, my name is Monique.
Monique, what a pleasure. Sounds like maybe a first-time caller.
Well, yes, it's the first time. I've heard your show yesterday.
All right. And what's on your mind, Monique?
Well, I think people should deserve to know whether the mayor is having an affair with another man or not.
What?
I believe that we do not need another scandal.
All right. Okay. Well, Monique, thank you for the call. Thank you for the call.
No comment there at all.
Interesting. Did she say?
I don't know what you said. Getting back to your list there, Kelly, if there's one thing that when looking at that list and what a lot of people have brought to my attention is that Ken makes reference that things that we have accomplished. And I think that that's something of significance in that you look at it and it's what have you would think that a person, and I know that in some of the literature that I'm putting out, things that I have brought out and have done that I have spearheaded.
We have another call. Can we get to you what you've spearheaded in just a second? Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Jack.
Hey, Jack. What's going on?
So does that mean that we're going to have a gay mayor?
Oh, geez.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Jack. All right. So I don't know where this is coming from, but Bennett, in any event,
accomplishment. You look at his list there, Kelly. One of the things he has on there is recycling. You know, that's something that I had spearheaded from the very beginning. I had made it a priority when I got elected in 2007. Was making, bringing forth a curbside community recycling program. It expanded into a glass recycling program. But, you know, when you look at the list and it says, you know, things we have accomplished over the 5 years, it's very, I don't know, it's almost taking credit for all things. Given he was mayor, but at what point, I mean, at some point, the mayor has to step forward and saying, I led these particular projects. I don't know if Gina has any comment to that list.
No, I've had like I was telling Miguel and Kelly, I've had about 100 people that have brought me this flyer that I guess Ken's mailing out to people or leaving at their door, whatever it may be. I'm just saying things that we have accomplished. And wow, seeing that list is, people had a lot of question marks all over their paper when they handed it to me. So,
well, we'll get to that in a second. We've got a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Brian.
Brian, good morning to you. Hope you're well. And first time caller?
No, I've called before.
Oh, okay.
But,
what's going on?
I just wanted to oppose to the candidates in the chamber who endorsed Miguel. There's some statistics in their magazine that talk about 1,300 people losing their jobs over the last year, and that the trends are not good for employment here. And I just wonder what the candidates are going to do about that. And then I had a follow-on question for Gina's question, whether there's a concern about splitting the non-incumbent vote between Miguel. Well, it's really for Miguel and Gina. Helping the incumbent. So anyway, that's my only two questions, and I'll get off the line and listen to the answer.
Guys?
About.
Okay, thanks, Brent.
Well, in regards to the 1,300 lost jobs, that's true. And that's where I, again, have difficulty with the mayor. Earlier, someone was talking about the diplomacy part.
I mean, to me, that's kind of I don't really – if I was, you know, just not – talking on the air, but I was just at home trying to figure out who to vote for. Diplomacy wouldn't, I mean, let's grow the city. I mean, and if you have to break some eggs to make an omelet of growth, let's do it.
Well, what I was leading to is if you're going to be speaking about diplomacy, how about being truthful with the public, you know? And again, Ken continues to paint this very pretty picture of the city. And that is one reason, again, why I finally had to step forward and say, you know, enough's enough, you know, and that happened, started happening in the dais, and I kept seeing that. So
we have got another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
But Mike, hopefully not comments about a gay mayor.
Well, you got that Lynn Allens. I think, isn't he a sodomite too?
Oh, geez.
Anyway, Mike, come on now.
I mean, they're all for this flaming gay agenda.
Well, I mean,
is it like
Mike,
a little cabal going on there?
A little cabal. Look, Mike, I mean, gay marriage is legal. What are you going to do?
Well, I don't have to do anything. They do it to themselves.
Thanks for the call. All right, we got a gay theme going on here today.
But I wanted to go back to Kelly when he mentioned about those 1,300 lost jobs and so forth. I mean, again, it's not the pretty picture that's being painted, you know. Unemployment here in Las Cruces is 7.5%. You know, in the state is less at about 6%, a little more than 6%. So we have lost jobs. We need to reverse that trend. We need to work on our relationships with NMSU, the schools, and so forth. We need to reach out to White Sands and see what's going on. We know that there's been federal cutbacks. We need to be part of the borderplex down south. And also look at other regional partners as well in terms of Albuquerque, Silver City. So there are ways we can reverse this trend. So that's what I'm looking at.
I would like to just comment, Brian. Thank you for that question. You asked, what would I do if I were to become mayor on the lost jobs? Once again, one thing I have been standing on since day one is the city is not a business-friendly city. And I believe that once we do make the city a business-friendly place, that would actually open the door for more businesses wanting to come in, which is going to create jobs. So that's probably one of the first things that I would want to look at. And then your other question was about as far as me and Miguel splitting votes. You know, the reason I'm running is, once again, hearing what people have had to say. They've complained, they've griped, and nobody will step up and do something about it. So I put my name in. And, you know, whatever people, I want people to have their voices back. And you know what? If the people that believe in me and my cause get out there and support me, great. If
What's
they
your
don't,
cause?
Great.
Boil down your cause.
Giving people back their voice, instilling the jobs back and confidence in the city of Las Cruces.
All right. And what's your cause, Miguel?
Well, our cause is to reverse this trend of where we're at. Again, let's accept reality, the fact that we are still in this recession, and we need to come together and create a new vision for this valley.
New vision for the valley, folks. 743. Powerful words from Gina and Miguel. And I wish we had someone to sit in for Ken and say what he would say. But I guess it's on this list here. 743, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. 1450 KOB. 523-1450. 523-1450.
When we in heaven,
hey Kelly, it's Jeffrey Isbell. How are you?
Hey, what's up, man? Haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, I'm loving the show today. I thought you should know that at the candidate forum the other night,
Jeffrey, we're not on the air. Can I hold the call?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, and you're the connection's real bad, but we'll be back to bring you on the air. Hold on. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Oh yes, this is Paul Jaramillo.
Good. Hey, Ralph, I'll put you on hold, okay?
Okay.
Thanks. Or whoever it was. Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought it was Ralph.
We're swimming upstream today. I've heard from a number of
thanks, man. I'm just gonna talk to Gina today. It's Kelly here, and thanks. And we've got a call from Jeff. And Jeff, good morning. You've wanted to comment on something.
Hey, good morning, Kelly. I was at the candidates forum the other night, and the mayor stated that he's talked to lots of people, and 75% of the people he's talked to would support a tax increase to benefit the aquatic center. And I wanted to see where the other candidates stood on that specific fact. I think the mayor's out of touch. He's been a career politician for 24 years now, and this just further proves that he's out of touch with the will of the people.
Well, it could be his love of manatees that's coming to the surface.
Or his love of taxes.
Okay, thanks for the call. All right, guys, do you want more taxes for the city, especially for the aquatic center? But we've got another call that I want him to drop out. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Oh, yes, this is Paul Jaramillo.
Paul Jaramillo, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Oh, yes, I wanted to say that I've had a chance to meet both Miguel and Gina, and I think they have a good idea, especially we need the better paying jobs, and to make it easier for jobs to come over here with higher salaries. So I wonder what they could do about that.
Okay, thanks for the call, Paul. All right, number one, aquatic center. Do you guys support more taxes to get this aquatic center? What else do we need to do?
No, I don't support any more taxes to support the aquatic center. We're already are the highest in the state, unfortunately, because of the GR tax that was voted into place, you know, by the mayor and some of my other colleagues and the county as well. So, no, I don't support it. How we invest the funds is a different conversation to be had.
Yeah.
So, but no, I do not support higher taxes for an aquatic center.
Do you support bringing in manatees to breed in the aquatic center? All right.
I'll pass.
No comment. Gina, more taxes.
No, more taxes. The city doesn't need any more taxes. But once again, this would be actually an interesting question to actually take it to people and say, you know what? Do you feel that we want this bigger Olympic sized pool? If so, this is what it's going to cost us, you know, and then see how many of those 75% actually come out.
All right. And what Paul Jaramillo says, we need more jobs with higher pay. Anybody can ask for that. Of course we want that. What could we do about it?
Well, something like that's not going to happen overnight, Kelly. But, you know, again, working with our local business community, taking inventory of our assets and our resources locally. And again, I can't emphasize more. We need to really tie in regionally with our partners down south and the ones up north to bring better companies to this area. And so I think that would be a start.
All right. And Gina.
Like as Miguel said, but I believe that once we just make our city a business-friendly city, this is going to open up the doors for any kind of job that will come in, reliable, reputable job.
Is it going to come flooding in?
I think we'll start seeing a really good, more than a trickle.
Okay, so more than a trickle-down economy, could be a flooding-down economy. And Mayor Ken, more taxes, really? I wish you were here to defend your ideas, or maybe you didn't say you wanted more taxes for an aquatic center. I don't know. You're not here. 523-1450 to call in. Take a little break. Come back and we'll finish up. I'm going to ask both candidates what's on the top of their agenda briefly and, you know, why vote for them. 750 got both, two out of three mayoral candidates. Ken Miyagashima is missing in action.
Bright shine.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. This is Neil. How are you?
Neil, good. Hold on 1 second. Hey, this is Kelly. Who's this?
This is Carlos Lovato.
Hey, Carlos, can I put you on a hold and we'll be back in just a minute?
Sure.
Thanks. And what's your topic? Briefly.
Transparency and accountability.
Oh, okay.
I have an editing background, and I have
some Carlos.
Words to
Carlos.
Say in favor of Miguel. So,
Carlos, I'll be right back. Neil, I'm off the air now, but what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, could you bring up something to the – I'm not real familiar with these candidates, the differences between them. They sound kind of the same. Does it not make sense that they will take votes from each other and Mayor Ken will win?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that. Wonder if they thought about that.
Do you want to – stay on the phone and ask it on the air?
Sure, if you want, sure.
All right, thanks.
Listening to AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connor on KOBE. There's no better place to be.
It's we've got Neil here on the air, and Neil, you had a question about possibly two candidates that knock each other out, and Mayor Ken comes back.
Yeah, you know, I just tuned in. You may have already talked about this, but you guys sound somewhat similar. Don't you think you're going to take each other's votes away and Ken will win with the plurality? And if not, what are the major differences between you two?
All right. Thanks for the call. Guys, are you the same?
I don't think we're the same. I mean, and I didn't think about any type of vote splitting at all. When I ran for office, I ran because I felt that we needed a change at the mayoral position, someone that was going to be a strong advocate for the city. And so that's why I ran for mayor.
We got another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Hello? All right. We had a call. Somebody asking about transparency. He might have gone on a toilet break, but in any event, we're going to have a transparent administration if it's either one of you guys.
Yes,
definitely transparent.
All right, let's just, because Neil asks, what are some? Oh, and we do have that caller back. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Calling on your show.
Yes, hold on. What's your name?
Antonia.
Antonia, I'll be right back. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'll put you on hold. Thanks for the call, to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'll put you on hold. Antonia, we're almost out of time. Can you briefly make your point?
To confirm with the previous caller about what their differences are.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
My name's Tom.
Tom, and just briefly, your point?
I was wondering about 7.5% unemployment here in Las Cruces. How many of that is people selling drug tests?
Okay, thank you. And thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Carlos.
Carlos, thanks. And sorry I cut you off, but briefly, your point on transparency?
Quick question for both candidates. I have an editing background, and the editing profession is always kind of a wanting transparency and obviously a good spending of taxpayers' money. And what my question for both mayors or candidates is, would they support the internal auditing department at the city, as that department needs the support of the mayor in order to ensure that taxpayers' money?
Good question. All right. So first of all, you guys to support the auditing department, like being ramped up, I guess?
Yes. Can I answer that really quick?
Briefly, we're almost out of time.
I've had that subject has come up at the other forums. We've had people that have said, are you open to a state audit? I would definitely say yes, because that only gives me an idea where we're
sure.
standing, and gives the city, the employee, the constituents an open.
Okay. And Miguel.
And the city does do annual audits, but I've gone up and above that, especially when I did a police audit, and I also did an audit on the cost of
okay.
City Hall.
Okay. We've got 2 minutes. Please, I'm going to give you each 1 minute to differentiate yourselves from each other. First, you, Gina.
Well, like, again, the reason I'm running is because hearing what people have had to say, and I'm not a career politician. Never. I do not care to be a politician. I'm going in there to be a public servant and represent the people and what the people that put me there and all the people that here in Las Cruces, I want to represent their voice. In talking to people, the current city government has not listened to what the people are saying. A perfect example is the GRT, the minimum wage, along with several other topics. So like I said, I am not a politician. I'm not in there for the long haul. I'm in there to do the best that I can for the best interest of the city of Las Cruces.
Thank you, Miguel.
And as a city councilor, I have been a public servant as an elected official. I've worked very hard for my district. I want to continue, and I am stepping up to become the next mayor, making the economy at the top of the list of my priority and reversing it and setting us on a positive path.
Thank you. And we got another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Yeah. Can one of those guys get you another hour to your show?
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, well, would the city council pass a measure that I can have another hour with the mayor's office?
You need to make peace with the mayor first, I think, Kelly. So
Ken, I'm sorry. Come on my show. Next Friday have 2 hours, okay? People are calling out for 2 hours. You guys have – I don't think you sound the same because I know you both a little bit, but I think we do need some differentiation. And it would be tragic if you're a supporter of Miguel or Gina – if you guys knocked each other out. Anyway, so can we come back next Friday for 2 hours?
Yeah, I believe my calendar's clear, so I believe that'll be okay.
Sure, that'll work.
Okay. Thanks for listening in. I hope you have a good weekend. Mayor Ken, shame on you. Get on this show. I no longer am under the delusion that you used to be a sumo wrestler, and I apologize humbly. Have a great weekend, everybody. Get out and have some fun. And we might have a little rain from the superstorm in Mexico coming in, strongest hurricane in history. And anyway, we'll meet you back in 2 days, minus 2 hours. Ciao. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Thanks to the candidates for coming on.
We know less things to sing. And when we first begun, ooh.